Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9-3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Imagine sitting across from a friend at a quiet small town bar. It's something a lot of us do or have done at some point in our lives. The local watering hole, the local cheers, the local, hey, let's sit down and talk and be humans and de-stress over a beverage type setting. Venting about work, venting about life, people, experiences. It's nothing unusual. Professors complain about grading students, the oddball teaching assistants who show up late or talk too much. That's, you know, if you're a professor, that's your job. You're going to talk about that with colleagues. You nod, you sip your beer, you laugh. Another day, right? Months later, that same friend walks in with a newspaper in his hand. And his face drained of color. That TA he was talking about, the teaching assistant, the TA stands for. It's the one he'd been calling a douche all semester. Well, he was just arrested for murdering 4 students in Idaho. That's when the ordinary gripe became something darker in a story you wish you hadn't brushed off, but what are you to do? It's a friend blowing off steam. There's nothing you could have done to stop this tragedy, nor could have your friend. And so John Snyder, a longtime public defender turned professor at Washington State University, realized that Brian Koberger, the graduate student assigned to help him teach criminal justice, wasn't just annoying. He was something far worse. And Snyder was not alone. We're going to talk about his experiences here today and what he was telling friends about Koberger prior to everything happening. This is in no way a piece that's, well, if he would have said something more, did no. This is just pure observation of what people were noting about Brian Koberger before the crimes were committed. As documents and interviews continue to emerge, a clearer picture is forming of what it was like to work with Koberger as a teaching assistant. The picture isn't one of brilliance either. It's one of arrogance, control, and the kind of creeping behavior that leaves people unsettled long before anyone calls it dangerous. Snyder's story tells us a lot about Koberger, and it starts in the summer of 2022 when he was randomly assigned Koberger as his assistant. The system used to allow professors to pick from a list, but that semester, assignments were randomized. Snyder remembers the first meeting. Clearly, Koberger was odd, but academia is full of odd people. He didn't see anything alarming at first. Just a graduate student who seemed stiff, overly formal. Didn't take long, though, before the cracks started to show. The problem wasn't just that Koberger missed classes. It was that he found other ways to insert himself, ways that felt less like help and more like harassment. Snyder recalls how at the end of the day, when he was trying to leave, Koberger would appear in the hallway and launch into trivial chatter. He'd follow Snyder down the corridor, nipping at him with pointless stories, refusing to let the conversation end. Snyder started calling it the terrier routine. It wasn't just irritating. It felt like a dominance game, something far beyond just that person that doesn't know when to stop talking. As long as Koberger kept him talking, he was in control. It wasn't only Snyder who noticed. His wife once waited outside in the car only to watch Koberger tailing her husband down the hall. Her gut reaction was immediate. She recoiled to the other side of her seat, unnerved in a way that she couldn't explain. Snyder had never seen her react that way to anyone. Then there were the petty arguments. Koberger once tried to rope Snyder into analyzing how he could beat a parking ticket, even taking him to the lot to examine the scene. Can you imagine going out to the parking lot and there's Brian Koberger with you? Okay. Well, if you were just slightly over the line about this way, then you would have been fine. But you didn't do that. You didn't follow the rules. Like, nope. I can only imagine how rigid that conversation would be, how bizarre that conversation would be. Snyder, who had spent decades as a defense attorney, tried to explain that people who think they know the law better than the courts always lose. Koberger, he's not a law student, never was. He was the one taking the law, the person who knew it, who was a defense attorney, who, for a good chunk of life, knew full well how you're going to beat or at least put your best foot forward in a parking ticket to get the least amount of points taken off your license. He would know. Brian Koberger, probably not, considering his multiple visible run-ins with the law. He doesn't seem to know a whole lot about any of these subjects, but he likes to convey to the world that he does. He likes to project. He likes to make you think. And if you think what's behind that curtain is knowledge, is information, is experience, well, then he has you fooled. Just like he liked to make people think he was this serial killer. He was this bad guy. He was this guy who knew the ins and outs, and he was, gosh, he knew his stuff better than Bundy, better than BTK, better than you name the multiple killers that he piecemealed together to come up with an identity and thought he knew better. Yeah. Koberger brushed it off, confident he was smarter than the system. It was the same inflated ego students and faculty later described in complaints. He belittled female classmates, made misogynistic comments, and questioned disabled students about whether they would even have children. You deaf? You think you should have kids? Those birthing hips over there. I wish I was making those stories up. I wish the word birthing hips was something that is not now forever implanted in my mind as a text message that Koberger sent to a woman he went on a Tinder date with. It sounds insane because it is, but it's real. Within weeks, Snyder realized this wasn't going to be a normal semester with his new TA. It was going to be an exhausting one. Other professors and students were dealing with the same pattern. By late fall, the department had logged at least 13 formal complaints against Koberger. He was accused of showing up late to classes run by female professors so often that students kept a tally. He told one woman that she was broken because she was divorced, broken. Spoken by a late 20-some-year-old Brian Koberger, because he knows what broken's all about. Well, in some ways he does, but it sure as hell ain't a divorced woman. He also argued about, and this is a term he came up with, or maybe it's somewhere else. I don't know. I have never seen it or heard of it before. You tell me your thoughts in the comment section there on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. He argued about sexual burglary in ways that unsettled peers. What does that mean? Does it mean someone who goes in, essays someone while they're burglarizing the house? Female graduate student said he blocked doors in their offices, forcing others to intervene so they could leave. One undergraduate reported that he cornered her so persistently, she had to be escorted home by her boss. Faculty began whispering that if he ever became a professor, he'd end up harassing, stalking, or even essaying the students. Mark my words, is a quotation from an email from a professor warning of this. One even pushed to have his funding cut so he'd be removed from the program entirely. It wasn't just rudeness, it was a pattern of control, intimidation, and pettiness that everyone could see, but nobody could stop. People described him as a man who enjoyed conflict, who seemed to thrive on making others uncomfortable. Students noticed too. Early in the semester, one joked in an email to a friend, "My TA looks like a murderer." It was kind of meant as a throwaway line, the kind of gallows humor college students toss around about creepy authority figures. But in hindsight, it kind of lands a little differently. The odd behavior escalated after November 13th of 2022, the night the four University of Idaho students were killed in their home just 20 minutes away from WSU's campus. Koberger came back to class with cuts on his hands. Students noticed bruised knuckles, redness, even a bandaged finger. His demeanor also shifted, disheveled, withdrawn, suddenly avoiding conversations about the case everyone else was discussing. How this did not turn up to be a giant red flag in that class and more people in there didn't start going, huh, maybe it's him? I don't know. I think the first thing, again, I'm not criticizing these students at all. They're young. They're inexperienced at life. Detecting creepy, weird, odd behavior or understanding what to do with it, or even if you do know what to do with it, where does it go from there? But I am honestly a little bit surprised that nobody was going to the administration going, you know, there's those four dead students about 20 miles away and nobody knows who this guy is. My weird kind of uncomfortable TA showed up with cuts on his hand and bruising and doesn't seem to be himself more than he already doesn't seem to be a human. I don't know, kind of odd. Oh, yeah, he drives the car you're all looking for, too. The timeline, I don't know. I think it would have timed out where his car would have been in there at some point. I am just surprised. Are you surprised by that? Are you surprised that nobody raised a red flag there going, in the odd chance, maybe it's him? I don't know. I am a little. Kind of in the same way, and this is an observational thing, and I'm curious on your thoughts. I mean, in the same way the surviving roommates didn't call 911 immediately. Again, it's not a criticism. It's an observation of, I guess, the path, the mindset that a young person had or has in this situation as to getting troubling, bizarre, disturbing, odd information. You're pulling this into your brain by living the experience. And then not saying anything other than to friends. Obviously, they called 911 eventually, but I'm not criticizing them for doing that. I fully believe it has everything to do with fear, shock, conditioning, and just really different mindset growing up than folks even just a few years older may have. It's a way that we're tethered to these things. These things bring us comfort and security more than, I guess, calling the police. And that makes sense. I can understand the psychology of that. But it is bizarre, I guess, by perspective. He apparently stopped bringing his phone to class. A classmate reported him to police after noticing his bloody knuckles and thinking he'd been hitting something. Well, weird. Snyder, he still just seemed irritating. Or to Snyder, it seemed irritating. A wimp more than a threat. That could be another part of this. He does come across kind of as a weird, wimpy, overly pretentious character. May not be one that you saw and thought, oh, he's capable of that. I mean, it's a crazy thought to begin with, to run that through your mind, to actively consider that this person that you're working with on a daily basis for all these months, or that is teaching you that, yes, he's odd, he's weird, he's chauvinistic, but to cross the line of being a quadruple homicide serial killer, that's a bridge. And I can see why it might be a bridge too far for many, just on the sole reason alone, that's a lot to handle. That's a lot for one's brain to take in and say, okay, we'll check that box. That makes sense. Kind of comes back to self-preservation a bit as well. In retrospect, the details of this do align with the reports pouring out of the unsealed interviews. Classmates describing intimidation, professors recounting red flags, students recalling hands that looked injured. Taken together, the picture is haunting. December 30th of 2022, Snyder sat in his nearly empty building when the custodian mentioned police had sealed off the basement. They walked to a picture board of faculty and graduate students speculating whose office was being searched. When the custodian pointed to Koberger's photo, Snyder felt it click. A few minutes later, his phone rang. First, his brother-in-law called, then his son, and the Moscow police themselves, his own TA, the one who wasted his time with nonsense, was in custody for 4 murders. Happy New Year! That was how he spent December 30th. The realization rippled through the department. Other faculty replayed their own encounters, as anyone would. Students came by Snyder's office to check on him. The chair reassigned him a new assistant, one who would make his job easier instead of harder. Can you imagine that? Well, it's hard to follow Brian Koberger, but I'll give it a good old college try. But the damage was already done. Snyder's sense of safety and his sense of purpose, they've been rattled, as it would be for anybody. He dedicated his career to promoting justice, to teaching students how to treat others with fairness and decency. Now he found himself wondering what it meant to work alongside someone who studied criminology not to protect people, but to hurt them. He later learned that police had found a list of women's names in Koberger's possession, including someone Snyder knew from the department. The purpose of that list is still unclear, but to Snyder, it confirmed what he'd felt all semester. This wasn't just an irritating grad student. This was someone who had used his role to push boundaries, to exert control, to probe for weakness. The broader context only deepens that impression. Beyond Snyder's story, the unsealed records show a department on edge. Complaints stacked up, faculty worried about the future. Students traded notes about his creepy comments. Some feared he could become a predator. All the while, he was hiding in plain sight as a teaching assistant, using the role to test how far he could push without consequence. When Snyder reflects on it now, he says what bothers him most isn't that he missed the signs of evil. It's that Koberger chose to use the study of criminology, the same field Snyder taught, with a sense of justice to become a better criminal. Just like Snyder had spent decades helping people caught in bad circumstances, trying to guide them towards decency and fairness, Koberger, he says, dove headfirst into the abyss. That betrayal isn't just personal, it is institutional. Academia brushed off the complaints as personality conflicts. Students joked about him as looking like a murderer. Professors rolled their eyes at his petty arguments. But none of them had the authority to act decisively. And by the time the truth came out, four students were dead. For Snyder, the reality still stings. I thought he was just a wimp, he said. Turns out he was a monster. The story of Brian Koberger as a TA isn't just about one professor's miserable semester. It's about how arrogance, intimidation, and entitlement can look like minor irritations until they're reframed by violence. It's about how people normalize creepy behavior until it's too late. And it's about the uncomfortable truth that sometimes the person wasting your time, following you down the hall, or making your students uneasy isn't just an annoyance. Sometimes it's the red flag nobody wants to take seriously. But what do you do? If I was in his position, I don't know what I would do. I would be filing complaints. I'd be doing everything you can do, but you can't lock him out of the classroom. You can't say, get out of here. This is this professor's job. He was assigned this guy. You can't just kick him out. Because what would happen if you take measures like that to the extremes and in your own hands? Well, you could lose your job too. And most people that are strange and odd, well, they don't turn out to be Brian Kohbergers. They may turn out to be many other things, but not usually a Brian Koberger in terms of level of violence. But what about those lesser ones? I mean, the goalposts are pretty high on a quadruple homicide. But there's a lot of people who aren't going that far. But they're going beyond the lines. They're going beyond the goalposts. They're making it to the concession stand with their extreme behavior. They're going way, way past the goal line. And those are the people we need to be more aware of, because they start somewhere. Koberger started somewhere. He started with petty, smaller things. He didn't go so far right out of the gate. We've learned that. But when he did go out of the gate, he went 0 to 1,000 pretty fast. But what do you do when you see something and you say something and nothing can be done because that person hasn't technically done anything yet that we're all aware of? What's going on in that digital history? What's going on there? Sometimes if we could just take a look, it'd answer a lot of questions. Although Koberger dumped his history pretty quick, and you can damn well bet as technology evolves and as people get more and more comfortable with it, I know it sounds weird to say that we're not comfortable with it, but there's still plenty of idiots out there who don't know how to erase a browsing history. Koberger knew how to do that. He knew how to erase the browsing history and then erase the data of the browsing history and any trace of the browsing history. So it was just gone. It wasn't just a, let's delete this. It was, let's wipe this sucker clean. And he did it pretty good for a while until he was caught. And those last few erasure moments didn't happen yet. And we got to see a little chunk of what was going on in that mind of his.
Tell me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Do the same wherever you're downloading podcasts. You'll find us there. And do press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on this and the many cases that we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Curious for your thoughts. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.